So I'm honored to be here with you today. And thank you, Lori, for inviting me. And thank you all for attending and holding space for this conversation. And as it says in your program, this is about the journey to purpose. Because it is a journey, right? It's not a one-and-done thing. We've all had different purposes in our lives. We've felt purpose in being in relationship, purpose in maybe what we're up to here at East Shore. But it is a journey. And I want to kind of destigmatize it a little bit, because it can hold like this heaviness, right? Oh, I don't know my purpose, or I'm out of alignment with my purpose, I'm bad and wrong. And I encourage you to take on another frame, and that's aliveness. So I don't mean aliveness like when you're triggered and you say something untransformed to somebody you love. You know, you're tuned up. I don't mean aliveness like Tony Robbins peak state, like everyone jump up and down. You know, I don't mean that. What I mean is that deep alignment that you experience in yourself and others when they are living their true vows, when they are at the center of the image that they were born with. You might have experienced it as wild eyes. Anyone ever seen somebody with wild eyes that was like they were so excited about who they were and what it is that they were doing that it was just, it poured out of them? It doesn't mean like crazy, like wide open eyes. But like, you know, they're there. They're committed. Like you can tell it's real for them. You know, it might not be your purpose, but you can tell like, wow, that person is really speaking the truth to me right now. So my invitation to you all today, as we spend the next half hour together, is to look at your own lives. And where might a greater sense of aliveness and alignment make a difference? Because at any given time, we're connected to a varying degree. It could be in a conversation that brings you alive, a relationship that brings you alive. But then there might be these dead zones. And for those of us who still attend workplaces, I remember myself when I began my career. I began my career in investment banking and venture capital, and I was in the Sears Roebuck headquarters in Chicago, which is where I'm from. And I saw this sea of cubes, and I was like, "Oh my God, is this what adults were talking about when, like, me being a grown-up? Like this? This is like a sea of deadness." This is not aliveness at all. And so growing up in the Chicago suburbs, you know, I didn't see a lot of aliveness. I saw committed people. I saw, you know, good, mostly Christian, Catholic, church-going people. But there wasn't a sense like, oh, my God, I'm doing the thing that I was meant to be doing. You know, there's a lot of shuffling. Like, from the boxes of home to the box of office to gym, store, soccer practice, music lessons. And I saw a lot of what I'm just going to call deadness. Like there weren't people who were like, yeah, like this is what it means to be alive, live in the suburbs and go to my professional services job and, oh, I just love it. This commute is amazing. Oh God, this is it's fantastic. So I didn't see that, but I knew it was real. So I had three really crazy aunts. Anyone have a crazy aunt or uncle who is just like totally dancing to the beat of their own drummer? Yeah. So on my dad's side, we're Irish Catholic. And my aunts were just fully self-expressed. I mean, we're big people, and especially our women are like big women in our family. And they smoked, and they drank, and they told jokes, and they did improv, and they made art, and they taught, and they were nurses, and they wrote books, they studied philosophy. I mean, they got the message early on that, like, this world wasn't built for them, so they gotta stand for it, and they did. And I just remember seeing my aunts on stage, just, like, completely, I'm like, wow! And then get back in the car, go back to the suburbs, and, you know, school, sports, all that kind of stuff. So I had this possibility, and it's still alive with them. I mean, they're still writing books and still, you know, nurses and cooks and studying philosophy and calling me on my BS and with very untransformed language. And like this beacon of aliveness was always there in our family reunions, in our holidays. And it didn't always end well, but there was always aliveness in the room. There's always aliveness. And so that's my invitation. Like, where might aliveness make a difference? Might make a difference in your lives, in your participation here at East Shore, as you dream big and create this next chapter of your community. So that's my invitation. Where might aliveness make a difference? So, and this is not just something that's lamentable, right? As I mentioned, like, there's a lot of shuffling going from one place to another, kind of half engaged, checked out, wanting to be somewhere else you're not. It's actually an epidemic. And I know that word gets abused in the media, but 70% of American workers are disengaged. 87% of the global population is disengaged. And if you think about all that we've created as a species, it comes from that 13%. From the entrepreneurs, the radicals, the activists, the visionaries, the people who are standing for a different future. Now imagine if we had 7 or 8 times that. In each of us, at the center of the image we were born with, is that codex. There's something here for each of us to do. Not just in our careers, but in our communities, in our politics, for Pete's sakes. Like, there's something that aligns us, that moves us into a greater attunement with who we are, where we get to have the wild eyes. You know, you get to enroll people to fight for what's sacred. So that's where I really want you to listen from. Like, where might more aliveness make a difference in my life? My notes. So as I mentioned, you know, I began my career in a very traditional way. I didn't listen to the clarion call of my amazing aunts. Started out in finance, venture capital, investment banking, working in different tech startups that I thought might give me that. I mean, those are all pretty sexy, high-powered things. I'm like, okay, well, maybe that'll give it to me. And when I looked up the chain, I'm like, oh my God, these guys don't have it either. And I didn't even have the language. Because in Chicago in the 80s and 90s, which I presume is probably not that different than Seattle, or where you grew up, there wasn't a purpose conversation. Unless you're really lucky, you grew up with a shaman or an elder who said, you know, what is your gift? What is your blessing? What's your giveaway? You know, what's there for you to be and to contribute to your tribe? So we didn't have that. I mean, if you had a meaning question that couldn't be answered by the Catholic Church or the Chicago Bears, you were SOL. I mean, and so, you know, as I was, you know, quote unquote winning, you know, getting good grades, playing sports, and engaging in these high profile careers, I didn't have the words to say, what's my purpose? Like, I didn't know. I just thought there was something wrong with me and internalized it. Like, it's my fault for not wanting to be a dutiful 80-hour a week investment banker. So I escaped with a lot of the resources I had as an investment banker. I traveled, I partied way too hard, and that escape route, while fun, got me in a lot of trouble to the extent that I was in jail in 6 different states by the time I was 27. And that's when my journey began. So I began doing inner work in my late 20s and began what I now know is like the 7 years of wandering the desert. Going to different spiritual communities. I was part of the Unitarian Universalist community in Davis and Sacramento. Going to India, meditating, doing nonviolent communication, therapy, 1,000 hours of leadership training, men's work, the Mankind Project, which is still my core transformational community where we get to look at our shadows and what's in the way of us living our purpose. But none of it really gave me that certainty. Like, I didn't know, like, where's my taproot? And I distinguished a bunch of inauthentic behavior, of course, and got to become more of an adult and not such a one-dimensional party boy, but none of it really said, okay, Brandon, this is why you're here. Go get a mentor. Go to this graduate program. You know, build this tribe. And I had the great fortune to meet one of, there's probably 200 people in the world that do this work, that actually help individuals connect to establish that firm identity in the true vows. Like, why you're here. Why it matters. And it was the most enlightening work of my, you know, at that point, 33-year-old life. I distinguished all the stuff that was in the way, all these inner voices, and really got clear, like, what I'm supposed to do here. And I'll share a little bit about that in a second. But getting clear of these inner voices, the ones that dampen our aliveness, like the critic that says, like, who am I? Who am I to do this? Like, do I have what it takes? Did I really? I screwed up before. I'll screw it up again. You know, the image consultant, the one that just wants to look good and be kind of fit in or maybe stand out, but that actively tries to maintain that public perception. And my skeptic, that was like, this is a bunch of new age hooey. No way, no how. We're humans. We're biological. Blah 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 blah. And the risk manager, the one who doesn't want to sacrifice this high-profile career to go do something like write books and guide people into their soul. So getting all of these in right relationship, these inner voices, it was like somebody had taken a fish hook, put it in my sternum, changed my chest. Even though I still didn't know fully my higher purpose, I was like, I'm free. Like, whatever it is, I have the tools to distinguish the dialogues, the very human dialogues that aren't aligned with my deepest aliveness. And that's really why I'm on this stage right now, because, or this isn't a stage, what is this? This is a dais, a chancel. Because this is what I care about. This is really what I care about. Because when this tweak gets put in, people step into that congruency. And they start to take risks and self-express and serve and say, I don't know, and be vulnerable and have intimate, authentic connections with each other. And there's aliveness in that. So that's my work now. And I get to, like I said, write books and bring this work into progressive, enlightened communities like this, but also places you wouldn't expect it. Like, I work with the U.S. Marine Corps, the Morgan Stanley, Johnson & Johnson, the Coast Guard, a lot of places where purpose, A, actually exists in a very concrete way, purpose to make money, purpose to serve, but it might not be authentic. So what I want to do is just share a little bit about how aliveness manifests in these three realms, an upper realm, a middle realm, and a lower realm. So the upper realm is probably one you're all very familiar with, given that you're sitting in these chairs, this realm of prayer, of unity, of meditation, the place you go when you're awed by the towering redwoods or the pines or the vistas after a hike. You're like, wow, man, this is what it means to be alive. You get that aliveness feeling when you're experiencing those things, or you're chanting, or doing your prayer, or your morning meditation. Now, the middle realm is kind of what I was talking about during that 7 years, my 7 years of wandering the desert. It's a realm of becoming a grown ASS man, grown person. And that's, you know, being emotionally fluent, being able to distinguish internal state from the outside world, being able to give and receive love fully, like getting all that stuff out of the way so that you can just love somebody without all your stuff getting in the way and the protection mechanisms that keep you small. The middle realm is very important, and we need a lot more of that, more mentorship, and more people doing inner work at earlier and earlier ages. And these are the two realms that most people tend to think about, like, well, okay, well, if my life doesn't work or my job stinks, I need to pray more. I need to meditate more. Take me out of it or be more centered. Or I need to go do this program or work with this coach or this therapist. And it's fine. And it's good and it's healthy. And that's where two-thirds of the aliveness equation kind of comes online. Like finding your center. Getting all the stuff out of the way that prevents you from experiencing joy and giving and receiving love. Using your I statements. But what gets ignored by so many of our traditions is this lower realm. And we can thank a lot of our indigenous brothers and sisters for keeping these traditions alive. Vision quests, medicine ceremonies, guided facilitations. This is the realm of your soul's image. Getting clear on that. This is the realm where our divinity descends. This is what it's often called the descendant spiritual path. Not taking us up and out into a special place of holy communion, but taking us down and in through the muck. What's our deepest pain? What's the thing that's going to call us into action and service? You know, as they say, what is our why? Why are we here? Why are we here as a community, as a marriage, as a family, as Americans, as Seattleites? Why? Why? And this lower realm is the aliveness of legacy, of making your highest contribution. Because you're all highly functioning people, and you can muddle through competently a bunch of stuff that has nothing to do with who you are, right? We've all done home improvement projects we don't care about. You know, we've all shuffled to this particular obligation or that particular obligation. You can do it with like 20%, like 20% of you. But when the fullness of those vows, the silent vows that you make to yourself in the water, in the darkness, when that comes online, it's this guiding, aligning principle that follows you everywhere. And the beauty of it is that previously this conversation was limited to hippies and New Age people who were like, yeah, I'm going to find myself and all that. Now we have 30 years of research from some of our most esteemed institutions, Harvard, Stanford, Yale, Brown, McKinsey, Bain & Company. People are studying purpose, and the results are astounding. And that's why I'm able to have this conversation with Marines and investment bankers and startup founders and nonprofit executives and places and academics, places where they don't do anything unless there's data. So I'm just going to share a little bit about it with you, but the science of purpose, and you can check this out, scienceofpurpose.org is where all of this research lives. But when that alignment comes into play, these breathtaking outcomes start to happen in your career, in your health, and in your love life. So in your career, you know your purpose, you make more money, you have more wealth, you have a deeper sense of fulfillment, higher levels of learning, engagement, and productivity. Because you're there. You're not wishing you were in the next meeting. You're like, yeah, okay, let's get this thing done. I'm aligned. This project feels aligned. This company feels aligned. I love my team. Let's get it done quickly and with joy. Now, in the realm of your health, this is some of the most groundbreaking stuff. It actually strengthens your body. So it improves the health of your telomeres and your DNA. It strengthens your cellular structure. Some great research out of UCLA is showing that you have stronger cells, lower levels of cortisol. Because you have this background narrative of your life about who you are. So when life's ups and downs happen, it's not like, oh, you know, everything's terrible now. Like, okay, set back, what can we learn? Try it another way. And the result of this is that people who know their purpose live 7 years longer. And these aren't 7 years staring at the wall in a retirement home. These are 7 years of art, mentorship, engagement, reading, writing, bringing the fullness of what it means to be an elder into the world. So 7 good years. Now, as it manifests in your love life, this is pretty wild. I'm still kind of in disbelief by some of this stuff. But they find that people who are aligned, who are connected to why they're here on this planet, are regarded as more attractive than similarly constituted people who don't have that inner knowing. And you've seen it. You've seen people who are aligned. They walk into a room and you're fixated on them. You're like, wow, like that's an astounding level of energy coming out of that person. Like, what's this about? And so they're regarded as more attractive, and when they're in relationships, they actually experience being in love 31% more of the time. So they're just present to what is, and not like in the inner narratives of who said what, who didn't put the toothpaste cap on, the toilet seat down, and all that. You're like, oh, look at that. My ignorant husband did his thing again, and I love him. And in the intimate realm of your life, it's actually more satisfying. And that's all the language I'm going to put to it right now, but they've done studies that say that people who know their purpose actually have a more rewarding intimate life. So there's this beautiful body of work that is now starting to be inseminated into all these different sectors of society that this never before happened. This is a very special time to be alive, when all sorts of people who otherwise would not be interested in a conversation around aliveness, purpose, soul, legacy, are now like, hold on. Kids just went to college, what's my life about? Hold on, going through a divorce, what's my life about? So I want to take you into a little bit of an experience of what more aliveness and alignment might look like. It's going to require a little bit of trust. I'm going to ask you all to close your eyes. Just make any final adjustments you need to kind of feel comfortable in your body. Any tension you have, just envision it almost like melting and falling off, like dripping onto the floor beneath you. Especially invite your face and your eyes and your neck to kind of fully relax. Everyone's eyes are closed, so feel free to let your mouth hang open and your tongue relax. And I invite you to picture somebody you love deeply. It could be your partner, child, grandchild, dear friend. Really, any person you love deeply will do. It doesn't matter who. Just pick one right now. Now recall a time when you two were deeply connected. You weren't present to really anything else other than what you were doing and each other. It could be a moment, something great happened. It could be a trip. Just a period of life that felt connected. Don't have that time, raise your hand. I'll give you more time. Okay. Now take yourself back into that moment with that person. I'm thinking right now of my wife and a medicine ceremony we did in Panama together. Take yourself back into that moment with that person. Who did you get to be there? What was it like to be you in that moment? Was it spacious? Maybe joyful, grateful. Maybe there's a sense of creativity or adventure or mystery. Just inquire who you got to be in that moment or that period of time with that person. Maybe he was loved and loving. This experience resonates with who you are at your deepest level, what it's called your core or your essence. That effortless radiance of who you really are. The natural flowering of your being emanating from the most pure place within. I invite you to project that essence onto every area of your life. Meaning, if you could take this core essence into your marriage, into your self-care, your family, your community, your workplace. If it showed up in your spiritual practice and even how you earned and saved and invested and spent money. I want you to feel what would be the expression of aliveness, your personal expression of aliveness in those areas. And further, I'd like you to, now that you've connected with who you are and it's where your essence needs to flow, or wants to flow, really, desires, like it's almost like a yearning, like, oh, I've got to pour it into my relationship with my son. I've got to pour it into my relationship with that difficult coworker. I've got to pour it into how I hold my self-care. I invite you to inquire into what is the essence of East Shore. Because this group has a field. There is something real and true here. What is it that you're present to when this community is aligned with itself? The feeling you get that makes you come back. You want to get involved and appreciate and acknowledge and give. What is the essence of this community? And what are its dreams? What are the dreams of our tribe? The ones that are connected to those that came before and the dreams that will follow. What is our core radiance as a community? Deep breaths into that feeling, that knowing. And as you're ready, open your eyes. All right, come on back. Come on back. There's bodies, there's space, there's wood, there's lights, trees. All right, so now I'm going to ask you to take another risk. Nothing ventured, nothing gained here, right? So I want you to turn to someone that you did not come with and share your name. I know it's on most of your lapels. Share your name. share who you really are. So I might say, Lori, my name is Brandon, and who I really am is love, play, and joy. So go ahead, take a moment, find something you did not come with, and share an essence flavor with them. Take about 30 seconds each way. So, by show of hands, is there more aliveness in this room? Yeah? Okay, great. And I really invite you to continue the inquiry, whether that's with your own personal practices around connecting to this image at the center you were born with, the vows which you're most committed to, more prayer work, more lower world purpose work, more middle world being an adult work. Because when those three blocks align, this is really what you get to bring here into your love life, into your careers, your families. This is what you get to create Ishore with, the fullness of you. Not any of the other inner voices. Any opinions or ideas about what happened in the past, you can create with this place, with who you are and what you're present to in this room. Thank you.